Hello?
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and for some of us, good evening. Welcome to Keeping It Brief. This is our show, our poets and brevity writers show for the brevity writers group and for everyone, for all over. We welcome you and thanks for coming out to listen to us today. And we are here with myself, Diane D, and my co-host, Weaver of Dreams. Kate, would you like to introduce yourself, Ducky?
Hello, my dear. Hello. It's lovely to be here. We're going to have a good afternoon, and I'm very happy to be here.
Me too, girl. It's been too long. It's been a week now.
Far too long. But what was happening?
I know. Well, it's great to be back and to be doing the show. We have a lineup today, a wonderful lineup, but we figured out, you know, we would love to have posts for our lineup of open poetry today. So anything goes. And during the show, if you want to add your brevity to the open show contest, hopefully we can get to it. And if you added today, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And if we don't get to it, we certainly will next Wednesday. So why don't we go ahead and start looking at what we have for poems? And Weaver, what are you putting up for us first?
Well, first of all, we have Drip Filtered Arias by Tress Tershett. Would you like to read that for us?
I certainly would. Drip Filtered Arias are lift in plunges to creamy inlet, seeming apnea. Now, espresso eyes show drip into cup ribs. Unquenched filters clogged with a million sands. Sahara salt rasp, grima echoes. My lady fingers lie empty. I whisper scattered soliloquies, drowning in dry caves and areas, indissoluble. End poem. And my apologies, I wrecked a few words there, but wonderful, wonderful piece of poetry. Great writing, Preston Set. I love the title. It gives you an aura right away of mystery, what's happening, what's going, what's coming. And just a wonderful, wonderful write, and I'm glad to be able to have it on the show. Thank you. And Weaver, what did you see in this piece?
Oh, yes, I agree. I actually would have stumbled on the same words as you did, so, you know, don't even worry about it. You know, it's sometimes we come across words we haven't come across before, which is great for us to learn, but not when you're trying to get the thing out of your mouth. But I thought this was lovely. I whisper scattered soliloquies, drowning in dry caves, arid areas. I'm sorry, my mouth is getting so dry. I don't know what it must be, nerves.
No,
so pardon
worries.
me if I'm not very coherent, but such a dry mouth. Right, sorry. August duets bathe our lips in plunges to creamy inlets, feigning apnea. Now we see in the AN that apnea means loss of the ability to breathe, or temporary cessation of breathing, which is it's quite a well-known thing. It's not a very pleasant thing, but it's lovely in this because it's feigning apnea, which is nice. Espresso eyes slow drip into cupped ribs unquenched. Beautiful as usual. Beautiful, Questerith. I love the way she puts all these things together and gives you the insight and the images to enjoy. But I particularly like, I whisper scattered soliloquies, drowning in dry caves, arid areas. I thought that was just lovely. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. That was a beautiful piece. And I really enjoyed the imagery. August duet bathed our lips in plunges to creamy inlets, steaming apnoe. I have to look that word up. But this piece is just beautiful. And what an imagery for this line, espresso eyes slow drip into cupped ribs. I mean, that just took me right through. And then unquenched filters. The wordplay, the choice of words and everything, it's just amazing imagery, amazing display of poetic devices. And thank you so much, Prestoset, for sending this in to us. And it was a great way to start off the show. So, yes, and I want to say, too, thank you, Pam, for posting the link to the show. I so appreciate it. We appreciate it. I'm so glad you're listening, and we are just going to continue on here. And what do we have coming up next?
Just a little aside before we go on. Sleep apnea. Apnea is something that affects an awful lot of people. I was actually diagnosed with sleep apnea. And you put a big machine on your face when you go to sleep, and it just keeps your airways open. Well, I couldn't do it. I just said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not putting that on my face. So I still have sleep apnea. Oh, it was horrible. Horrible. Anyway, the next one we have is 16208 150 at the Poetry Cafe. And there's a SoundCloud with this. That doesn't seem to have gone very well, actually. Is that all of it? Yeah, that's all of it. Yes, so SoundCloud for this one. It's at the Poetry Cafe by, I know that we need the name, John Roper.
You bet.
At the Poetry Cafe. Like a stranger at a funeral, the thin mic stand towers over the homely tableau of fireside rug and leather-winged chair. About the raised die stage sit restless bodies still in coats against the cold, heads bent over typed sheets in plastic sleeves. I skulk like a fugitive in the dark, as the host with clipboard and garish shirt stalks the stage like a fairground barker. Eons pass until I hear him shout me on, and clutching my slim volume like a shield, step smiling towards judgment.
Wow. Now that from the title on, at the Poetry Cafe, I had no idea with the title or the image what this would deliver. But John, as usual, delivered a wonderful piece, you know, like a stranger at a funeral, the thin mic. And it's just starting out, like I've always said, that first line, if it grabs me, I can't let go. And I have to follow it through. I don't care if it's 14 pages long. But like a stranger at a funeral, the thin mic stand towers over the homely tableau. And thank you so much, John, for sending in a SoundCloud. We love hearing poetry in your own voice. You know, if you can send in a SoundCloud, we appreciate and welcome it, because poetry in your own voice is your speech, your words, and in your voice they have meaning that doesn't with coming from us. So just keep, you know, if you want to send those in, just keep doing so. And thank you again, John. And I just want to say, like, this piece is, it struck me as dark, you know, like I spoke like a fugitive in the dark as the host was clipboarding garish shirt. And I can picture this guy with his clipboard soft the stage like a fairground barker. This cafe is, you know, it's like a dark cafe, but it's just amazing the way the image that he has created here and the scene he has created and the story that he's taken us through. Beautiful, beautiful, right? And Weaver, what did you feel on this, my friend?
Oh, yes. This brought back memories. Oh, yes. The first time you speak at a poetry cafe is exactly this in every detail. People sitting about desperately trying to remember what they've written down because they're going to go up on the stage and read it out to a bunch of strangers. It's an incredibly frightening experience. But once you've done it, once you've done it, it's not so bad. But yes, every word of this, it just brings back memories. The host with his clipboard and his garish shirt stalks the stage like a fairground barker. Yeah, perfect. I like this so much, John. As I say, you've brought back great memories. Can't wait to do it again sometime. So thank you very much for sharing that. It was fab.
You know, I agree. Like, I myself, I have never spoke or shared any of my work at a poetry cafe, but one day I did share it at an outdoor event. And I only shared one piece, and it's amazing to be able to share your work and to have people appreciate and enjoy your work. It's just amazing. And he put this together excellent about what it's like to come in front of a microphone and share your work. It's just beautiful. So Weaver, what do we have going on next?
We have Heart of a Wolf, Soul of a Dragon by Kitty the Naughty Poet. And I think I'll go ahead and read this one, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm crossing us off as we go. Heart of a Wolf, Soul of a Dragon. Heartbeats chime in time with the wolf, padding quietly through the ice of life, leaving its wolfy footprint behind in the snow as smoke dances with the dragon's fire, flying through painful dreams, burning all that remains. End poem.
Yes, and now did she ever capture that image and actually build the piece that just is so intriguing, heartbeat time and time with the wolf. And look at the wolf's eyes, like you can see his heartbeat in his eyes, and she captured that. She grabbed that and brought it to life, padding quietly through ice of life. Ice indeed, look at the, you know, like I just, how she pulled out of this image, not just two main things in the image of the beast and the wolf, but it's the little things that she saw, you know. She saw the ice peeking between the cracks and leaving its wolfy footprint behind in the snow as smoke dances with the dragon's fire. Dragon, yes, now I called it a beast, but yeah, it's, you know, she captured it all. She has awesome wordplay, great imagery. To stand without that image, absolutely. And the last line, burning all that remains, it's a great ending, great way to close it, and excellent job in six lines, beautiful brevity. And what did you think? Kate.
Oh yes, I agree entirely. Kitty the Naughty Poet does so well. I love this. You see them eyeing each other up. But I love the way it skips, if you know what I mean. It's got movement, it skips along. You're drawn into it and you want to know what happens next. Heartbeats chime in time with the wolf. Now that's a lovely, lovely starting line. But as always, it's that ending line that gets me every time. I love the way people can do it so well, because I do it so badly. I kind of run out of steam. But flying through painful dreams, burning all that remains. I mean, that's it. As you say, in so few words. So, yes, I liked it very much. And thank you so much for sharing, Kitty.
Well said, Weaver. And you know, like you said, wonderful story, great story. But the unique part of this story is, if you notice in the author's notes, she painted this image herself. And I mean,
no.
And to be able to paint it, yes.
What?
And paint it and speak to it and put words to it. I mean, look what she did here. Artwork that is amazing. And
wow.
Well described. It's like, you know, this piece, I'm so glad that to know that she captured. She created the image and she captured the story. Beautiful work in both aspects, in your
beautiful
writing and your artwork.
I honestly,
beautiful.
I forgot to look at the AN. I must do that. Must remember to look at the AN because it gives you so much insight. She painted this. My goodness. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Well, such a talent. Incredible. I like it a lot. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Heart of a Wolf, Soul of a Dragon. Beautiful,
mm-hmm.
Beautiful piece.
Yes.
All righty. So we have another piece up next.
We certainly do. We have Desire Path by Kiku. Would you like to read this, please?
Yes, I would. I would love to read this. Just taking a sip of my water, and it is called Desire Path by Kiku. Kiku, I may pronounce that wrong, my friend. My apologies. Summer grass crunches beneath my feet, and the jagged road only farther from you. Where the paved path no longer seen, I've come for a short visit to rest in the land of tangled wildflowers. Early clouds convene and drape their coats over private conversations of fir oak trees. But mid-sentence comes the breath of the sun. It welcomes the field that embraces my sore needs, for the desired path will lead me towards home. End poem. Great right. Thank you so much, Kesu. This is just beautiful desire path. I enjoyed reading this and the imagery of this and the word choices. Summer grass crunches beneath my feet and the jagged road only further from you. Beautiful start, beautiful opening lines and takes you right into the poem itself, and the message that the poem brought out for me is traveling and moving and taking the desired path in life. And yeah, sometimes you're going to end up in the land of tangled wildflowers, but then you move on to another area of this desired path that you're seeking out. Just a beautiful message, wonderful metaphors, wonderful story. And Weaver, what did you think of this, my friend?
I thought it was lovely, and it's so true. You will find in anywhere you go, people make their own paths. There could be gravel paths, there could be paved paths, but it's not the direct path that this person wants or people want. They will actually, you know, wear out the grassy surface by repeated foot traffic, as it says in the AN, and you see it everywhere. And so we won't be dictated to, it would appear. You know, I don't care which way your path is pointing. I'm going the way I think is best, which I think is what comes through in this one so clearly. You know, thank you very much for making the path, but I'm going to go. Your paved path is no longer any good to me. I'm going for the shorter visit, dressed in a land of tangled wildflowers. So yes, I've seen it myself. These paths appear when people decide that's the way they want to go, and that's what your metaphor is here, and it was beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank you, Weaver. Well said. And just reading the author's notes again, and beautiful story that and message that's coming through here. But, you know, like Keku says here, this is an unplanned route or path, such as one worn into a grassy surface by repeated foot traffic that is used by pedestrians in preference to or in the absence of a designated alternative, such as a paved pathway. And how the poem, you know, captures that and describes that, the jagged road where the paved path no longer seems. So you're already in a different land, you're on a different path. And it was unplanned, and that's what the desire path is. And that was captured beautifully and well described, considering what a desire path is, an unplanned route. And like the poem said, where you end up in the land of tangled wildflowers, where you can rest. And then beneath the sun, it welcomes the field that embraces thorns, for the desire path will lead towards home. Beautiful, beautiful piece, wonderful message, and great story in this. Thank you so much for sending this in for us. It's wonderful piece. And Weaver, where are we going now?
And now we have The Musings of a Toddler by Nietzsche Lenore. I will read this one, shall I? Yes, I shall. Sorry, I'm singing at you again. Bad habit. Musings of a Toddler are perfectly for me. I've got a brain of a five-year-old. Everyone hates my endless questions. They say I'm too young to know. They refuse to tell why people get sick, yet stop me from playing in snow. I'm told that lying is very bad, but I've often caught others doing it. And when I confront them about that, they just refuse to admit. So I usually like to stay silent and wander alone instead, about sickness and lies of adults and the monsters under my bed. End poem.
Well read. Great job. Great job. Go ahead and you read that so well. Go ahead and share on that one.
Well, I think it's absolutely lovely. Musings of a Toddler. It's so true. you don't realize, you know, exactly what your children are taking in when you're chatting away on the phone or with your friends or whatever. And they're listening to you and they ask you a question. You don't want to upset them. You don't want them to worry about things. So you just, you don't tell them, you know, refuse to tell why people get sick. It happens, darling. That's all. That's all you need to know. And then they say you can't play out in the snow because it's far too cold and you'll get frostbite. So, you know, you can see why this would be written. And it's so beautifully written from, you know, from the perspective of a toddler. And no wonder he stays silent. But I'm a bit worried about the monsters under the bed. You know, that would worry me. But I can see where that's coming from. So, yes, I thought it was beautifully written from that perspective and so true of how adults treat children. So
very well said. And you know, captured from a toddler's perspective, and that's so true. And, you know, everyone hates my endless questions. They, a beautiful rhyming to great meter on that. They say I'm too young to know. They refuse to tell why people get sick, yet stop me from playing in snow. And it's like, you know, as a toddler, they don't know. They want to know. They need to know, and they should know. The earlier we know, the earlier we learn, the earlier we experience, and the earlier we grow. And, you know, it's never too young to ask a question. If you're old enough to ask a question, you're old enough to get an answer. And I just love how this was put together, and I'm told lying's very bad. How many times are you told don't do that? Do as I say, not as I do. I did. I heard it in my childhood, you know, lying was bad, but I heard people do it. People did it and all around. So as a toddler, when we ask that question, why not get the truth? So I just appreciate this piece. Thank you so much for sending this in. Really well done and beautiful, beautiful brevity. Now, Weaver, we have a couple of friends on the board with us listening in. We have Tay-Tay Snattlerake. That's my Canadian Newfie language. Rattlesnake. Tay-Tay, Rattlesnake, and Hats are on the board. Can we grab one of their pieces?
Yeah, well, I've got one up at the moment, so I'll go and find theirs. And well, this one is being read.
Beautiful.
So the one I have at the moment is Small Grains of Sand of the Beauty of the Whole by Linda Odermar. So would you like to read that while I go and hunt about?
I certainly would. Small Grains of Sand of the Beauty of the Whole by Linda Odermar. Vibration meets mirror gloss surface with plastered facade, coral red every day, thick like lipstick against fair skin. Neon sign laughs mockingly, each thin wallet at an accelerated pace to the tone down of everyday life suit. Cough frame the personality behind interlocked lions. Seconds become hours of repeated scenes, daily excursions with dreams in, the searching gaze, the horizon, with desert dry throat, locked in the dream or stuck among the memories, unaware that today's beauty slowly flows out the hourglass of life. Wow. That just right from the title, Small Grains, but for the beauty of the whole. And in describing this hourglass and this sand coming through and flowing and creating, flowing at an to the tone down of life, the pace of life. Just a beautiful description and capture of the sands and how the sands represent the beauty of the whole. And unaware that today's beauty slowly flows out the hourglass of life. It is so, I mean, that is, that image alone, this hourglass of life flowing of today's beauty. I mean, I would just want to go out and get an hourglass and look at it and representing life flowing in beauty. Beautiful description, beautiful metaphor on this one. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lenan. Kate, what did you think of this, my dear?
Oh, yes, I agree with everything you said. I think it's just lovely. Hourglass is a fabulous thing to look at. If you want to learn how to meditate, I can't do it. My brain won't sit still long enough. But if you want to learn to meditate, you get yourself an hourglass and let it just flow in front of you. It's just, it centers you. It makes you calmer. And, of course, you know, when your eggs are done. Sorry.
No.
I'm so bad. Yes. Vibrations meet mirror gloss surface with plastered facade. Coral red every day sticks like lipstick against bare skin. Beautifully written. I love the choice of words. I love the imagery. But neon signs laughs mockingly, each thin wallet at an accelerated pace to the toned down of everyday life. So, yes. Very well done. Thank you very much, Linda. I'm looking forward to hearing more of your poetry because that was just lovely.
It was. It was beautiful. And I see, I think you have KK's piece up on the board. Or
I have I have one by Hats at the moment.
Oh, beautiful. Okay.
Yeah. So that's, give me a moment just to paste it into the other board. There we are. Quiet Conversations by Hats. If you just give me a moment to get a little sip of water, I'll drink that. I mean, I'll drink that. I'll read that. I'll read that.
Okay, you drink to that.
Cheers. I'm getting worse. Here we are. Just one moment. I shall be there. Quiet Conversations. The sun is a vinyl record. It's rolling between the clouds. And since the morning runs through the trees, through the window, its rays illuminate our naked bodies. Refusing to believe it was morning again, my green eyes are hypnotizing your wet mouth that is whispering, not a word and don't move. And my body is left to your lips. Amidst the pale blue walls, you're crawling into me, the same as the dry soil swallows the water. My womanhood takes all. Slowly, you don't even know how, your lips are whispering a soft tune, the silent song that has no words. End poem.
Wow, now that is an amazing brevity. Beautiful piece, quiet conversation. So
and,
well written.
Aha. It has a SoundCloud. Yes. Damn, blast it.
It
has a SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.
Well, let's just go ahead and listen to it. We shall listen to it.
I agree.
If Jean wouldn't mind. Jean, could you put on this for us, please? Quiet Conversation by Hats. Maybe I didn't give her the SoundCloud.
Oh, Hats says it's music only. Okay.
Oh, okay.
No.
Cool. No panic. No panic. We're all right.
All right. So, yeah, go ahead and give your feel on this one.
Well, I thought it was very atmospheric. You can actually see those naked bodies and the sun waking them up gently. My green eyes are hypnotizing your wet mouth. Doesn't that just sound so sultry? Not a word and don't move. Oh, very good. Yes, I think this is... I do like sensual. I kind of like it a lot. And I think this is just lovely. And then you get to the sun is a vinyl record. Now, that's a lovely way to start it, isn't it? It's rolling between the clouds. And since the morning runs through the trees, through the window, its rays illuminate our naked bodies. So there you are. We know exactly where we are. We know what we're doing. We know exactly what is in everybody's minds. I think it's just lovely. refusing to believe it was morning again. Yes, we get that feeling, don't we? Oh, it's not morning again. But what a way to wake up to morning. I wouldn't mind that. It'd be very pleasant. So, yes, I think it's lovely. I really like it. It's very sweet, but very sensual. And the lips are whistling a soft tune, which I thought was just a lovely line. So thank you very much, Hats. It was beautiful.
It certainly was. It was amazing. And before I comment on this piece, because there's so much in my head that I want to talk about it, I want to welcome Bobby to the show. We have Captain, am I saying this right, B2 or B2? B2. Oh, Chow, how are you?
Chow, hi,
oh.
Bobby. Hi, Chow, como estai?
Hi, baby, how you doing?
Thank you for asking, you sweet.
Sorry, say that again, Dad, I didn't hear you.
Let's fix that.
It's so good.
Is that
it's
any
so
better?
Good.
We know.
It's so it's so good to have you on the show. Bobby, welcome. We're so happy to
have you.
Your wisdom and your what you bring to the show is just phenomenal. We always love having you on. Thank you so much for coming out and sharing this with us today. Did you hear Hat's piece or did you read Hat's piece?
I did not, but I did hear we were carrying on about it, so it made me sorry to miss it.
it's worth carrying on about, that's for sure. It's definitely worth carrying on about. But
apparently,
according
to Weaver,
it is. Yeah, 100% right. And it was. I just want to actually put out my feel on this one, right from, like Weaver said, right from the first line, the sun is a vinyl record. It's rolling between the clouds. You know, can you imagine a record, record album soaring through
what
the clouds?
What lovely visual imagery.
Mm-hmm. The imagery is amazing. And the message is that a lot can be, or what I felt from it is so much can be said without words. Quiet conversations, you know, everything you want to say in your head can be said without words, and it can be said describing it in your mind as it is, the sun being a vinyl record, and going through, and since the morning runs through the trees, through the window, its rays illuminate our naked bodies. I mean, and in the last, tied right into the last stanza, slowly, you don't even know how. Your lips are whistling a soft tune, the silent song that has no words. Beautiful description of saying everything you need to say, but saying no words, using no words. And people actually have a talent to do that. And a lot of time it's in words written on paper or written in or passed out in another form on a different platform. And it's quite often in the form of poetry, and Hats did it justice here. Beautiful piece of poetry and well suited for today's conversation. Thank you so much, Hats, for listening in and for passing that one for us to enjoy. And then we will go ahead with our next piece. Weaver, you did share on that, right, because Bobby was
yes.
quite enticed by it.
Bobby knows me.
I did read it rather quickly, and I agree. It's got some beautiful visual imagery, and I love the first stanza. That metaphor is just exquisite.
I agree. Yes, I was very caught by that as well. Yes, beautifully written.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Right, the next one we have has a sound cloud. And it's Like a Dead Man Writing Poetry by Peter Allen. So I wonder if Jean could maybe get that for us. That would be great.
Poem Like a Dead Man Writing Poetry. How does a stone statue write poetry? How does his pen move authentically when there's nothing that moves him? Imagine scenarios borrowed from music, plucking emotions from the notes in the air, mimicking, mirroring what should be. A poet as honest as a dodgy second-hand car dealer. My verses are constrained like plasma in a zero Celsius magnetic field. The crap I write here brings poetry into disrepute, insults, besmirches the essence of the art. Yet here I am, lying in bed refusing to stop writing, like a dying man writing his own obituary, as Patricia Cass sings, Avec le temps. End poem.
Wow. Amazing piece there, Peter. I love the SoundCloud. Thank you so much for sending it in SoundCloud. And again, we love hearing poetry in the poet's voice. It just adds to the piece, and this one certainly didn't let us down. Another awesome piece, Peter. And Bobby, what did you think of this one?
I could just listen to Peter's voice. It's hypnotic. I really enjoyed it. I like his thought process, his motility of thought. How does a stone statue write poetry? Does his pen move authentically? It's provocative. It's intriguing. I mean, mimicking the mirror, which should be a poet, is as honest. I love the word dodgy. I've always loved the word dodgy. I don't know why. A poet is as honest as a dodgy secondhand car dealer. I mean, the crap I write here brings poetry to disrepute. I think that's a little too self-effacing, because Peter writes some marvelous things. I mean, even when he writes comments, I get verse from him in his comments. I think the man is too critical of himself, but I love this.
I totally agree, and I agree and love what you said there, Bobby. I just Peter's voice, yeah, great, you know, great poetry voice, great voice,
yes.
That captures you, takes you right in, and you said that well, that, you know, it's Peter is not capable of writing crap, I don't think, but the way this talks of how does a stone statue write poetry? How does this pen move authentically? How can we write poetry if there's nothing moving in us? I mean, for me to sit down and write a poem, I'm writing a piece right now for a friend whose grandson just passed, and by his own hand. And I have sat and I have reached inside myself, and I find inside myself what's moving about this story and what can I write about it. And that's what Peter has done here. He's captured what you need to write a wonderful piece of poetry. It's, and your pen moves with you, and your pen moves with your emotions. It's just, you know, I'm not sure that's what he was going for, but it certainly puts it out here that, you know, poetry, like a dead man writing poetry, we go with what moves us. And if we're moving, a dead man doesn't move, right? So, Weaver, what did you think of this? Or
yes,
go ahead, Bobby.
Bobby?
I'm finished. Okay.
Go ahead, Weaver. Yep.
Thanks, my darling.
I commented.
I heard your voice, and I thought you wanted to say something, so I was giving you the opportunity, but obviously you were just coughing or something.
I was in violent agreement.
Oh, cool. I like violent agreement. That's very good. Yes, I think this is Peter's voice. I mean, I'm sorry, but Peter's voice. What about that? Beautiful, beautiful. I looked at his AN, and I can kind of agree with that last line, because you're writing to a prompt that's given to you, in these contests. So here's your prompt, write to that. Now, basically what he's saying is he could write the romantic emotional poetry, but he wasn't feeling it. It was just the writing, you know, for the prompt. So he did it with zero feelings. And I can fully understand what he means by that, because you do tend to sometimes think, okay, this is how it should be. This is how I'll write it. There's many times we've looked at what we've written and thought, well, okay, well, it sounds good. I'll do. But when you actually write something that is special to you or means something to you or write about something that actually matters to you, there is a difference. It might only be to yourself, but there is a difference. So you notice that difference. So yes, I thought this was beautifully done. It's a tongue-in-cheek poem that says it all, really. Basically, the crap I write here brings poetry into disrepute. Insults besmirch the essence of the art. Ah, so good. So yes, Peter, thank you very much for sharing that. It's marvelous.
It is marvelous, and I'm glad that you mentioned the author's notes, because I'm reading it, and the metaphor for not allowing oneself the luxury of feeling emotions, and he put this metaphor out here beautifully. You know, a dead man does not feel emotions, and to write with zero feelings, I mean, like I say, I don't know. I have never tried that, writing with zero feelings and pure fiction. I have written pure fiction, but it's not usually that involving in my emotions. So it's just a wonderful piece, wonderful metaphor, and really well done. Thank you so much, Peter, for sending this one in.
I'd like to call my attention to the author's note, because I didn't notice that. The poetry was written in this pure fiction with zero feelings. I don't know. I get involved with words, and I get emotional about words.
Yeah, I totally agree. I find it hard to write without emotions. Maybe that's a challenge. I don't know. Okay, so what do we have next, Weaver?
Yes, before we go on, I would like to say, if I could, Pam is doing all the hard work. Sorry, Pam, I hadn't realized it was you that was doing all the work in the background. So thank you very much for that. And you'll keep me right when I forget when there's a sound cloud, please, which you know I'll do. So the next one we have
Pam's
is Maid.
Pam's our technical wizard.
Ah, yes, she is. She's wonderful. Thank you. So the next one we have is Made in Stone by Debbie. Bobby, would you care to read this for us?
Two. Made in Stone by Debbie. Toes on ponds ripple without destinations. Broken glass knows not how to hinder. Hair strands on end with startled warnings, keeping at bay embarrassed expression. Leaping toward sights unseen, with forgiveness at hand, crossing fixtures in delayed motions. Cancer beating not humility. Truth being consequences of braided paths. Opening palms to accept cynical word. Declared mind made in stone. Thought given still. End of poem.
Beautiful, beautiful piece. Thank you so much, Debbie, for putting this in the show today. We really appreciate it. And Bobby, you read that really well. What was your take on reading that?
I like the abstraction of it. It makes you think. Opening poems to accept cynical words. The lines she's got in here could almost be standalone brevities. They're so tight. They're so precise. They're laser precision. Crossing fixtures in delayed motion, leaping towards sights unseen with forgiveness at hand. This is a really very skilled brevity, a lot of abstraction in it, but not obscure abstraction. It's just very economical write, and I admire someone who has command of metaphor and language. This is Pam writes metaphors like this, and I hate her for it. Hear that, Pam? No, I've always admired her for her skill with metaphor, but this is really a superb write.
Very well said. Very true. Awesome, right? And yes, I'm reading again the author's notes, Made in Stone, and what she wrote for here was a contest. Go for it. Just go with it. And the choice of words she was writing to was take chances. And you know, you are taking chances in life, and how the metaphor she uses, taking chances, it's like toes on ponds ripple without destinations. I mean, yeah, when you throw a rock in that water, those ripples have no idea where they're going. They just flow. And that's how we take chances. We don't know where they're going, but we take that chance and see where the ripples go. And then hair stands on end with startled warning, keeping at bay embarrassed expression. And capturing again how we take chances in that last stanza there, opening palms to accept cynical word, declared minds made in stone, thoughts given still. And, you know, made in stone, it's like we take these chances, and even though we don't know where what's going to come of it, take the chance, you know, just go ahead and take this chance. Just go with it. And she captured that, and she says that beautifully here. And I liked how you talked, Bobby, about the beautiful lines here that stand alone, and they do stand alone. And each couplet has its own, each two lines is saying its own message, but saying the same thing. It's wonderfully written and very well done. And Weaver, my friend, what did you think?
Well, ladies, you've done it again. Thank you. You've said everything that needs to be said. I love it. That makes my job so easy. You've just done everything for me. I love it. Yes, I like that first couplet. It sets it up, doesn't it? Toes on ponds ripple without destinations. Broken glass knows not how to hinder. Yes, I mean, that's it, exactly. There you're throwing yourself into life. You're throwing yourself into the world. You're taking a chance. Sometimes you might know what's going to happen, but most of the time you don't, but you still do it. I think that's wonderful. I wish I had that kind of courage. But it's, yes, leaping towards sights unseen with forgiveness at hand, crossing fixtures and delayed motions. Yes, as you say, they could stand by themselves. They're so good. So, yes, you've definitely brought the idea of what it's like to take a chance and do something that might not end up the way you want it to end up, but you're still doing something. I think that's wonderful. So, Debbie, thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Weaver. Really well said. Again, like, you know, I just, the brevity's on this show. It's just, I'm not a brevity writer. I'll write 10 times what a brevity is. But I love learning more about brevity, and I'm learning so much about brevity on this show. And what do we have next coming up, Weaver?
We have Spanish Flamingo Dancer by Darkened Aura. And would you like to read this, Diane?
I certainly would. Spanish Flamenco Dancer. She was a Spanish flamenco dancer with long, silky raven hair. And when she spun her scarlet dress, roses flew in from everywhere. They fell at her feet upon the stage. She was magical. They called her a mage. Hypnotizing men with her enticing midnight eyes. I love you, lies wrapped in the moonlight disguise. She was a Spanish flamenco dancer living in despair. But those nights while she was working, she lived without a care. Now, I just, the meter on this, I so enjoyed reading this. It was like, I just, it flows, the meter is so catchy, and it forces you to enjoy the rhythm, and there's such a rhythm in this, right from the word Spanish flamenco dancer, capturing the rhythm and capturing the music within this piece in these words, just so well done. I'm just very impressed, Dark and Aura. Thank you so much. And Weaver Girl, what did you think?
Oh, yes, I think this is beautiful, so beautiful. They fell at her feet upon the stage. She was magical. They called her a mage. Isn't that lovely? That's a word you don't see very often. I like that word a lot. Hypnotizing men with her enticing midnight eyes. I love you, lied, wrapped in the moonlight's disguise. It's so beautifully written, and it is really, I just get the, I can see the Spanish flamenco dancer, her hair spinning as her dress spins with her, and roses everywhere. Oh. But she's living in despair. Those nights while she was working, she lived without a care. So her dancing was what kept her going, I think. She could get up and she could dance no matter what was happening in her life. The music and the eyes and the people were there for her. So, yes, I think it's beautifully written, and it's sad, but full of spirit and full of life, but still sad. Oh. So, yes, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Dark and Doro is lovely.
It indeed is lovely, and each stanza captures the dance, the music of the dancer and the spirit of the dancer and of the writer and the dancer. And, you know, each stanza alone can describe the same mood and aura and everything. It's just so well done. And Bobby, what's your take on this?
Well, I think the visual imagery in this captures the dancer's movements beautifully. You can see it. But I think this is superb storytelling, and it's clothed in a well-constructed brevity with a smooth cadence and a spot-on rhyming pattern. It doesn't get any better than this.
Myself muted there. I totally see it and agree, Bobby, that the movement there and the movement speaks the message that the poem so beautifully captures of not really living without a care, but dancing and working and dancing and living without that care anyway. Really, really captured well. I'm quite impressed. And what do we?
Right, Diane, you kind of died off at the end of that sentence. Are you still? Are you there? Are you okay?
Yes, I sure am.
That's good. Your words disappeared at the end of your sentence. I thought maybe you dropped, but you're okay. Good. Right. The next we have "Dying End" by Tay-Tay Rattlesnake. And thank you very much for sending this in. And I will read this one, Dying Ends. I hope he understands me. I think he's having difficulty with my accent. Ken, it's awfully this accent, son. I'm awfully sorry. Right. In your eyes, losing control as I follow your path of red petals. Across the seas and sand, my love, I'll follow. You, my spectacular lady, until my dying end. End poem. And, Diane, would you like to make a comment about this?
Yes, I certainly would. And great, right? And Weaver, I think I've kind of called the reader a few times here for you. My bad. But I just want to say, like, you know, in so little word person, their person, their spectacular lady, across the seas and sand, and lost in the eyes, losing control as I follow your path of red petals. And it's just, you can imagine these red petals across the sand and across the water and the images gives you such an imagery, gives wonderful imagery of taking a chance and going with it and showing your love and declaring your love right until the dying end. Just amazing job. Really well done, KK. I'm so enjoyed this piece, and thank you very much. And Bobby, what did we hear from you?
There's a very economically crafted brevity. There's no fat in this at all. I mean, it's very precise. I don't know what, we've got a handful of words here that tell a story. Again, that's one of my metrics is if you can read a brevity and get a story from it, this is a good brevity. This is a person who has a precision thinking, is able to put the words together and still communicate something with them. And I like this. It tells you that he has deep affection for this person, and sees them slipping away, and is pledging on his undying love for them. And my suggestion is maybe next time, since he has difficulty with your beautiful accent, Weaver, maybe you ought to have the resident Yankee read it next time.
I love that idea, unless
our friend Rattlesnake and having the Yankee read the poem makes his head explode. We don't want any casualties. We've never lost a poet yet.
This could be the first time, no. Honey. You never know. You know what I mean? It's a little bit difficult for me to understand your accent, but I'm trying so hard.
We got to get you into more country music, you know, like the ever popular favorite, I Got Tears in My Ears from Crying on My Back.
I love country music. I love country music. It's so good. Okay. Right. Shall we get on to the next one? Yes, okay. The next one we have is 29. That's it coming up now. Precious Moments by Matt 29. So, Bobby, would you like to read this?
Well, yeah, sure. Especially since we just got the vote in from Rattlesnake. He says anything better than a Yankee. I only have one response to that, and my response is...
Bobby and Tay-Tay go toe-to-toe.
I love it. So cool.
I don't like him well enough to dislike him, so there's no problem.
Exactly.
Okay, here we go. Like a toe. I got the wrong one here. Hang on. I was two poems behind. Forgive me.
That's okay.
Precious moments. Here we go. Children running happily through the paddling pool, innocently embracing the splash of the water, moving without a care into the water's cool, legs momentum spinning as though a quarter. Frivolity enjoyed over and over as if on instant repeat, timeless and idyllic sense of joy, embracing the now, discarding any feelings of shame, and being beat, delighting in the cool spray of the water's mow. End poem.
Awesome read. Great read. And I think I'm stealing the show on this, but I'm just going to go ahead and say, like, are you ready to comment on this one?
I'm sorry. Were you speaking to me, hon?
Yes, I was, my dear. Did you lose me again?
I lost the first word, so I didn't know it was me. Yeah, that's fine. I've got you again, though. I'm so ahead of myself. I don't know which one we're talking about. Precious moments, yes? Oh, good old. I'm always like one step ahead of myself. Matt 29, beautiful. I love anything to do with children and anything to do with the innocence of children. I think it's absolutely wonderful. You can't go wrong. You really can't. children running happily through the paddling pool. Can you remember that? Those days, it was so good. Frivolity enjoyed over and over, as if on instant repeat. Timeless and idyllic sense of joy, embracing the now. But that's it, children live in the moment. They don't have the problems. They don't have the only problem they have is when am I going to get my next ice cream because it's so hot. So yes, I think it's absolutely beautiful. It ties together everything that a child would feel and enjoy on a hot day in a paddling pool. So beautifully written. Thank you so much, Matt.
Indeed, indeed, very well said and so true. And this kind of made me think, you know, precious moments made me think of the precious moments porcelain figurines. And each one is always, you know, usually of a child or a child with a sheep or an angel or something. All of those spell innocence. And when you think, because they're all usually with a child. And with a child, there is innocence. And innocence is a precious moment. It is probably the most precious moment that a child can display because innocence says, I'm here and I'm open and I'm ready to learn. I have nothing in my mind preset, so please tell me what you, you know, that's the way innocence is for a child, right? So it's so beautifully captured, Matt. Really, really well done. And Bobby, what did you think of this one?
I'm having flashbacks. There was a song in the 70s that I absolutely loved called Precious Moments. And when I saw those words, I've got that song trapped in my head. I promise not to sing it. I really like the visual imagery. I mean, he communicates the pure joy there's a chemical combination between children and water. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, in what and there is something about children and water they're drawn to it, and I don't care if it's squirting from a hose or running through a ditch. You know, it's mesmerizing to them, and this communicates that fascination with water and the pure joy of interrupting the spray. I remember when I was a kid that we didn't have – the neighbors had a pool. I had a sprinkler. I picked that with the sprinkler.
Very well said, Bobby. And like you say, you know, you could sing this. And you know, I agree with that. You could sing it. But I think our listeners would prefer – all accents aside, I think our listeners would – prefer you sing it than me, Bobby, because my daughter says if I had to sing for my supper, I would starve. So I'm not saying it.
Wow, feel the love.
Oh, but honestly, the child's innocence, right?
Exactly.
So, but yeah, beautifully said and really well written. Thanks for sending this in. And we have what up next?
We have Vermilion M, Sierra Sierra Mike. That's for Bobby.
Also.
Thank you.
Also.
Diane, would you like to read this, my dear?
I certainly would love to read this. Vermilion by SSM. Thank you, SSM, for sending this in. Vermilion, the color of love. Of new birth, of passion, of victory, of valor, the color of the invincible soul that deep inside silently roars and keeps us going despite adversity, even in turbulent times, carries us ashore. End poem. Wow. Beautifully written in a beautiful brevity, and I love the style, I love the scene, I love everything stirred in this piece. And Weaver, my dear, what did you feel on this write?
Oh, there's just so much in this. I mean, it's like 39 words, and it's wonderful. Vermilion, the color of love, of new birth, of passion, of victory, of valor. I love alliteration when it's done like this. And keeps us going despite all adversity, even in turbulent times, carries us ashore. I think that's just lovely, SS. I do like her. I do like your work. I think it's concise. It's, well, you can get so much from this, but it's concise and it tells a story, but it tells it in a way that it's not just trite, if you know what I mean. None of it is trite. It's not just words for the sake of words. You can tell by the fact that the time that's taken to construct this so that you get exactly what she's talking about. So I thought it was wonderful. Thank you so much, SSM.
Really wonderful. And she captures the side of Vermilion I've never seen, because whenever I've visualized and captured Vermilion in my own mind and stuff, I've captured fire. I've captured Vermilion represented destruction and fire and everything for me. But Vermilion, the way it's described here, it gives hope. It gives a new birth. It's passion, victory, and valor. She gives Vermilion a personality of someone we would look up to, someone we would revere. And I think she did it with excellence. She did it with, you know, the color takes on a new genre for me, like a new, I picture the Vermilion of her love and birth differently than the Vermilion of the fire. It's just, you know, how she captured it is just amazing. And Bobby girl, what did you think of this?
Well, I'm looking, this is an ongoing contest right now. And I was looking at the, it's one of the things I tend to weigh against a poem against is, especially if it's a contest entry, is how well it interprets the requirements of the contest. And if it has a prompt, how well it interprets, or how I should say how it interprets the prompt, not how well. But the contest says V is for victory, V is for valor, and V is for Vermilion. And the, apparently the prompt are two poems down here. But I like the fact that with what she's done here with the contest requirements, she's also giving you a glimpse into her thought process. This is what one of the things I like about poetry is if you can, sometimes the piece is very revealing in that it discloses a person's attitudes, their core beliefs, and here she's got the color of the invincible soul that deep inside silently roars and keeps us going despite adversity. I mean, this is a resilient gal. I mean, this is a fighter. This is someone who has what is the word, moxie. This is a strong personality here, and it shows in the piece.
Very, very well said, Bobby. It is a strong personality, and it's a strong piece. And that piece, you know, which talks of victory and valor, there's a survivor. There's victory in this piece. There's a very strong message here of victory and valor and newness, you know. Really, really well written. Thank you so much for sending this in. I really enjoyed this one. And Weaver, what do we have next?
Well, I make apologies to Tay-Tay. I'll probably send him this in his accent so he can understand what it is. But this is one of mine. This is Queen of the Cliché by me. Okay, and you know, I'll probably read it. Why not? Okay, here we are, Queen of the Cliché. It seems I'm called the Cliché Queen, which I see as being a plus. What do people have against the cliché? Why make such a fuss? If I've exceeded my cliché quota, I am truly, deeply contrite. But where is it written that I can only use 10 every time I write? A cliché comes into existence as a verbal knee-jerk reaction. Let's call a spade a spade. Stop being all talk and no action. I expect to see them eat their words, because if the truth be told, the pen is mightier than the sword, if I might make so bold. End poem. I even stuck it over my own words, for goodness sake.
Okay, that was such a great write. Queen of the cliche. I love that. And I'm going to save for last and ask Bobby. Actually, Weaver, why don't you tell us a bit about your poem?
I
don't need my telling, but...
Yeah, well, it's just that. There was a contest yonks ago somewhere else about using as many cliches as you can in a piece of poetry. And I didn't bother about it because at that time I wasn't doing so much of that kind of thing. But then a month ago, I thought that would be a great idea. Get as many cliches as you can into a piece of poetry without being too... Make it funny, basically. So I tried to make it funny. That's it.
Well, you did a wonderful job. I chuckled all the way through. The pen is mightier than the sword, but I prefer my laptop. I love that image. My pen is a laptop on steroids. But the way you put this together, cliche, who cares, you know? Like, I have front page fix with cliches in them. But, you know, whenever I'm writing and that cliche comes up in my strong word, weak word category, I'm like, oh, damn. But sometimes you can't do it without cliches. And yeah, 10 in one stanza or piece, you know, that... The machine may not pick it up. The automated robot there may not pick it up, but, you know, I pick it up. But cliches, sometimes we need to use a cliche to relay the message. Mm-hmm. And you did that so well here. You used a cliche to put a message out there about cliches that, what the heck? Okay, so it's a cliche. Cliches work. Well
mm-hmm.
done. And
thank
Bobby,
you.
What do you have for Weaver on this?
Well, I'm looking at the definition of a cliche, which is a phrase or opinion that is overused and betrays a lack of original thought. I can't think of anyone I don't know that hasn't used a cliche at one. And I have my most unfavorites. I scream every time I hear them. And if they're on television, I scream at the television. Without further ado, I could bitch slap says that. Or my absolute, the one to me that betrays a total lack of intellect is long time no see. Great. And they put the herbs in there, you know. I hate that. To me, it sounds like pidgin English. It sounds inarticulate. It's stupid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But no, seriously, some cliches do capture the essence of a thought, and have how many have the gems that rolled off whoever wrote Shakespeare's stuff? I don't believe Shakespeare wrote it. whoever wrote that stuff, how many of those pearls of wisdom and observations of humanity and character have turned into cliches, and badly quoted ones at that. I mean, everyone says, that's gilding the lily. No, the quote is to gild fine gold, to paint the lily. Everybody screws it up. There's nothing wrong with a cliche. If there was a law against it, I think half the population be incarcerated by now.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree.
Love your piece. Love it.
Thank
and you. You go, girl.
Thank you. I'm going off to cliche land.
It is an exceptional piece. And the talent in here is not so much in other things as it is in you put a cliche in every second word or every second sentence or every sentence to describe cliches. And you know, a spade is spade. All talk, no action. Knee-jerk reaction. And you make it rhyme. You make cliches. Use cliches and you make them, and they make sense. And the biggest cliche, the pen is mightier than the sword. One of the biggest cliches is the pen is mightier than the sword. But how can you say to someone, how can you tell someone, don't use your fist. Use your words to say what you need to say, because that speaks, you know, all talk and no action. That speaks louder, right? And how can you say it without a cliche? Well, beautiful. And using cliches to talk about the discussion of cliches, talent.
Thank you very much. It was just fun to write.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You're here.
Thank you.
That's a cliche.
All right. I love cliches.
Are you taking us next?
Well, now we have, I don't know if this lady is around to read this. I'll just have to ask if she's okay to read this. This is The Leaf by Diane D. Would you care to read this for us?
Certainly can. I have no problem reading that. Did I put it? No, I didn't put it. Oh, I just minimized my window. Okay, it is called...
Oh, did you hurt yourself?
No, I'm all good. No broken glass.
Oh, good.
All right. The Leaf. Overlooked like peppermint candy at Christmas. Secluded. A tenere tree in the Sahara Desert. Familiar. Like two slices of hot buttered toast. Tramp, like cigarette butts, drifts the greatest holy. Squelched, mausoleum silent, Thanksgiving leftovers. Bruised, autumn's blemish, mislaid school project. Withered, dry and sapless, barren tumbleweed. Ordinary, but too common, like guns in America. End poem.
Oh, lovely. That was lovely. Well, I'll go ahead and comment, shall I? Why not?
All right.
Okay, well, overlooked like peppermint candy at Christmas. That's obviously an American thing, so I'll just have to say, oh dear, poor peppermint candy. Right over my head. Right over my head. A lot of things are right over my head. Secluded, a tenier tree in the Sahara Desert. Lovely. Familiar, like two slices of hot buttered, oh, I love hot buttered toast. The smell alone, they're lovely. Squelched, mausoleum silent, Thanksgiving leftovers, bruised autumn blemish, mislaid school project. Oh, yes, so that's always going to be a bone of contention, isn't it? Mislaid school project. Oh, I think this is absolutely lovely. I think it's just the way it just, everything comes through so easily. It's easy to read. It's enjoyable. I like so much. Bruised autumn's blemish, mislaid school project. I think that's just, you know, it's just lovely. Lovely. Although, with the dry and sapless barren tumbleweed, poor tumbleweed. Yeah, I don't know. I've seen one. Have you ever seen one? Anyway, not any point to that. But yes, I thought this was absolutely lovely. But that last, you see, again, that last stanza, it just brings it, to me anyway, ordinary but too common, like guns in America. That just says it all, doesn't it? I think that's just so hard-hitting. Ordinary but too common, like guns in America. I thought that was lovely, Diane. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you very much. I very much enjoy your feedback. Well, good insight. And Bobby, go ahead, girl.
I first off, I like your illustration is a great prompt and lead-in. I like the way you've approached this. I like your thought process. This is I've never seen anything approached this way, like overlooked, secluded, familiar, tramped, squelched, bruised, withered, all adjectives that could describe the leaf, but then you've given the adjective a story behind it, a meat, personality, itinerary, and thank you for that, because I'd never heard of that before. Familiar, like two slices of hot buttered toast. I think I would have said the slippers and robe, but, you know, the toast goes with the robe. Trampled like cigarette butts, yes. Squelched. I don't know if you squelch your Thanksgiving leftovers. I devour mine. but bruised like autumn's blemish, withered. And yes, dear, I barren tumbleweeds. I lived in the Mojave Desert for 6 years, so I would end up with them in my front yard quite regularly.
Wow. I'd love to see one. Oh, cool.
It's fun to watch them. It's fun to watch them chasing one another across the roads. And then you look out into the desert and you see a dust devil, which is this funnel of sand just going up in the air from nowhere. The wonderful things, but it's the barren tumbleweed just does give that arid imagery. The imagery is just wonderful, and the last stanza. I'm a retired trained killer, 20 years in the Marine Corps. I've handled my share of weapons. I know how to shoot. I'm a dead crack shot, high expert. I tied the range record at 29 palms 1 year for 45, and I abhor the frontier mentality that so many Americans have. I really do. It just grieves me. It distresses me beyond words. So your last stanza is a gut punch.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Bobby. That was, you know, that was amazing feedback. And I, when I wrote this, I wrote it to the image, and what I wrote to the image, the message I wanted to convey is that, we don't realize the significance of that leaf. And that leaf is sits there and it goes things in life. And the last and final thing is that, it's ordinary. But it's too common. Leaves are here, there, and everywhere. And like guns in America, like guns anywhere, right? Like one gun is too many in the hands of the wrong person. And so my message was this leaf of what it can signify, and thank you very much for your feedback on that. It was very enjoyable to hear what other people take out of your words. So what do we have next?
Okay. I thought I had what we had next, but it seems I've lost what we had. Oh, yes. I got it. A Subtle Language Rephrases Death by Harko Parko. I'll read this one. A Subtle Language Rephrases Death. Now, that's an intriguing title. Here we go. Your eyes emit heaven. I exhale your wings as rain weds onto skin, preserving flowers that bloom into a reverie. End poem. Now, in his AN, he has, this is for his dog. Oh, that doesn't sound well. That sounds sad. Okay, who would like to comment on this?
I will go ahead and comment on this. This piece is based on the author's notes. My assumption is that there was a loss of the dog in the last or recently, and so sorry about that, Adam. But this his tribute to this passed away fur friend. You know, this beautiful animal. A subtle language rephrases death. And the subtle language is the language of love. And the language of love in this piece gives a new message to death, that it rephrases death, he's telling us. It shapes and reshapes death so that death is not the place where we fear. Death is not the place that's not okay. It's like persevering flowers that bloom. That was a beautiful way to say this in a subtle language. That was a beautiful way to say embrace. Persevering, preserving flowers that bloom. Embrace that. And so well captured. Beautiful piece here, Harco. Awesome job. And Bobby, what did you think on this?
I think his tribute and memory bestows immortality. And I want to convey my sympathies for the loss of a loving friend.
Absolutely. The loss of a fur baby, you know, like you're losing a piece of yourself, and there's only one to talk about it, and it has to come from your heart. It has to come from the language of love. And Weaver, what do you see on this?
Oh, I have to say, I'm so sorry, Adam. I know what it feels like. I think we all know what it feels like. I lost my dog, and I couldn't get another one. I lost my dog 20 years ago, and I couldn't get another one. I just couldn't, because they just mean so much to you. So I'm very sorry. I really am. It's very sad. Like, somebody else take over, please.
Absolutely. I don't know the loss personally, except when I was a child, and most of the dogs we had, they were community dogs in a small community of 300, 400 people. The dogs were everybody's dogs. So we never had a dog that I was able to embrace and accept and love the way that this piece speaks of the ability to love a dog. But I know that the feeling is no different than losing a piece of yourself through a child or something. And this was, I really appreciate you putting this in for us. For the show today, Adam. Thank you so much. And, you know, keep on keeping on. And what do we have next?
Right. What we have next is Lines Counted by Pam Ray. I wonder if Pam would like to read it. Am I thinking? Okay. Sorry, my mind. I do apologize. That kind of got to me a bit, that last poem, so just bear with me a second.
Completely understandable. I have two cats, and they're 18 years old, and every morning when the mail comes up and greets me, I consider it a gift because I know I'm not going to have them for much longer. And when I look at him and I know he's going to be gone someday, it just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
So
sad.
No apologies necessary. What have we got going on here? Oh, I get to read Pam. Oh, I hope this is not rife with metaphors. I'll just die of envy. Okay, here we go. Lines Counted by Pam Ray. I count the faded lines of broken branches hanging between the spill of autumn colors, stripping away ribbons of bark, exposing knotted wood, weeping sap, braided baskets to carry butterfly wings, pinned between the grasp of shadows, visions that speak in the murmurs of earthworms. End poem.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Wow.
Great read, Bobby. Great read. And I'm going to start off with you and say what view on that. Like, awesome. I just want to point out when it was written, it was a front right away, and there's no doubt, there's no question as to why, because what's in this brevity is just amazing, as only Pam can do. What would you feel on this or say on this one, Bobby?
Well, the first stanza grabbed me. I count the faded lines of broken branches. I find that interesting as you look up through, because I have several large trees in my yard. I have three enormous crepe myrtles. And I look up in there and I see dead branches. which to me is sort of the equates to the same thing. And you look at them, and there's nothing on them, and it does seem like they're just this faded line with nothing growing from it. It's just hanging between the spill of autumn colors. And you do. You get the wonderful colors, and then you've got this dead branch between. It's like with nothing on it. And it just seems so sad, stripping away ribbons of bark, exposing knotted wood. And it seems like that's what they look like they're only good for is making baskets. But I like the way she's described the broken branch, lines counted. And there's just the different incarnations here of counting lines in a braided basket, in the lines in a tree. Very creative, very insightful.
Very, very much so. Very creative and well used imagery and word choice. The lines counted title and the feel from the piece made me go to drawing a line in the sand. And how many times we have to draw a line in the sand of life and on life. And you know, sometimes we're going to come up against lines that don't feel right and don't come right and don't come out right. And the way she's described it here and grabbed the metaphor, stripping away ribbons of bark, exposing knotted wood, weeping sap. I mean, weeping sap is such a metaphor for drawing that line in the sand, finalizing and letting go and letting it out, weeping it out. It's just, I really enjoyed how she captured in each stanza a different metaphor to draw that line, or for me, it was like to draw that line. And those lines, we have many of those lines in life, and to pull them out of a tree and personalize it that way, really well done. And I just have one more thing to say about the visions that speak in the murmurs of earthworms. I mean, I'm not surprised this is an FPP with the choice of the words and how it's well written and everything. Great job, Pam. Impressive as always. And Weaver, what did you feel?
Oh, yes. I envy that ability. I really do. I think, metaphors. And it just gets me. I love it. I can't do it, but I love it. I love to listen to it. But I count the faded lines of broken branches. You see, you've got that catches you immediately, and you want to know what's coming next. I count the faded lines of broken branches hanging between the spill of autumn colors. That's just lovely. But then stripping away ribbons of bark, exposing knotted wood, weeping sap. So there is life still there. It's a line. It's hanging there, but there is still life if it's weeping sap. So, you know, you never know. Something might grow still. But then braided baskets to carry butterfly wings. Just really lovely. I like that so much. So I think I can see why this was a front page pick. I mean, I'm not surprised at all, because it's just so beautifully written. And please write some more, because I love this kind of thing, and I'll learn from you. So thank you very much, Pam.
Absolutely. And everyone talked of that stanza, stripping away ribbons of bark. And that, to me, you know, it's like unveiling your what you're feeling and finding out that it's weeping sap. And it's just powerful, powerful imagery, really well done. And Bobby, I don't think I asked you to share, or did I?
Yes, ma'am, you sure did.
Oh, awesome. See, it's almost 2 hours and my mind's going on me. All righty. So what do we have up next?
Now we're on to people who have already had a poem read, because we've run out of the ones that were just, you know, this is a doubler, as it were. This is, people have already had their poetry read, but we're going on to put up another one, if you can understand. Well, I
yes,
so
I have. If I may comment on that, I did reach out and put the word out that we needed more pieces. So if we read people a second poem, that's awesome. It's great. We love to do that. And let's just go ahead and put those second ones up there. And what were you going to say, Bobby?
I haven't seen. I was looking for yours. Do you have one on the board?
Yes, ma'am. I do on the board.
Have you? My goodness. Maybe I have to refresh. I'll refresh my page and I'll probably get it that way. But as it is, I'll just put this one up and then I'll look for Bobby's, okay? Just give me a moment.
I can't see it either. Maybe Bobby could post it.
Well, I put it up in the chat room and I also put it up in the on the board. But I can put
them
up again.
I'll have a look in a minute, my darling. I'll have a look in a minute. I'll find it. No problem at all.
Here's one.
Okay. I've got one up. I've got one here for the moment. I was just explaining to people who were listening that the reason why I was putting another poem up by the same poet. Because we've run out of ones that we had before. So they would know that there's a reason for people getting two up. I'll stop talking now. All right, this is...
Special today. Yeah. Two for one.
Exactly. This is another one from our Debbie. Frozen in Place. Oh, what an amazing picture. I'm going to read this if no one minds, because I love it. Right. Frozen in place, my fear diminished. Southern winds upon my back, concealed betrayal. Softening blows, more dangerous than ever. Mirrored balls tell no future, only lies. Offer damaging retreat for your only salvation. Speak unto me, only for you are my salvation. I speak only to you, my heart's trap. Dancing beyond moonlight end, your gazes allow me my only comfort. Setting free my destiny, taking back all persuasions. Deepening lust, turn to love's unforgiving power. Angel upon my shoulder, devil upon yours. Gifted arms stretched out. End poem.
Wow. I've seen Debbie's on this live writings before, I think. I'm almost sure. But the image that Blue Butterfly puts up, the images are just amazing. And Debbie captured this image amazingly. Like, she pulled out everything that the image conveys again. And we were looking at a previous one that did the same thing. And it's just, you know, the tone and the title, Frozen in Place, just captures, you skip over the image to find out what does she have to say about this, because it's just amazing. But Weaver, what did you think reading this?
Well, I was taken by the picture, obviously, right away. That's one amazing picture. So you've got your first stanza, frozen in place, my fear diminished, southern winds upon my back. Concealed betrayal, softening blows, more dangerous than ever. That's just amazing, isn't it? That gives you the idea there's something going on. Mirrored balls tell no future, only lies, offer damaging beauty. I think this is absolutely wonderful. The imagery, again, is because you're looking at that picture and you're seeing exactly what's written in front of you, which is so nice. Stars dancing beyond moonlight ends. I think this is lovely. And I love the last stanza. I mean, who couldn't love that last stanza? Feeling lust turned to love's unforgiving power, angel upon my shoulder, devil upon yours, gifted arms stretched out. That's just lovely. So, yes, I liked it very much. Debbie, thank you for sharing.
Yes, thank you very much. And to put another piece in for us, beautiful. We really appreciate it. And, Bobby, what did you feel?
I like her creativity, her interpretation of the prompt image. I've scanned quickly down the right side where it says more by Debbie, and I noticed that she likes these female fantasy figures, things that would not speak to me, speak very loudly to her, and with great color. I mean, frozen in place, my fear diminished. It just and just to look at what she's seen, the attention to detail she's seen in this image. She's got a wonderful imagination. Speak unto me only, for you are my salvation. I speak only to you, my heart's trapped. This is an amazing interpretation of the prompt. And I like you said, the last stanza: angel upon my shoulder, devil on yours. The metaphors she's selected and crafted are so so eloquent, and so they convey so much image and so much imagery. It's a really impressive write.
It is indeed a very impressive write, and the message that comes out of the title, Frozen in Place.
Yeah.
I mean, all of being frozen in place. Frozen in place has got to be the most fearful feeling in the world. But her fear diminishes, and she mentions that, and she captures it, that moment of being frozen in place. And it's really well written and described. Amazing metaphor and imagery here. Great job, Debbie. Okay. We are off to our next one.
Right, our next one is one from our Bobby, Twilight Contemplations. So would you like to read that for us, Bobby?
Certainly. Tee it up here.
Have you got it?
Bam! Twilight Contemplations. And again, this is for, I wrote to a couple of Lynn Gauthier's contests this week. So the imagery was the prompt. And this is what I came up with. Or as Pam likes to say, this is how it goes. As the sun retires in a heavenly conflagration of apricots and golds, another day draws to a close, and a sun worshiper ponders twilight. Helios embraces the last moments of a day before reluctantly retiring. Then beautiful Selene arranges herself regally across the horizon. Creamy clouds of evening swim the scarlet hues of deepening afterglow as Helios submits and grudgingly relinquishes its final rays of light. End poem.
Oh, beautiful.
Wow.
Beautiful.
That, very much so. I'm speechless. Go ahead, Weaver.
Ah, that is just so good, Bobby. I like it so much. It's, I love it. The fact that you bring out these wonderful characters from Greek mythology, and then you tell us about them in your AN, which is so good. I love your glossaries. So clever, because it gives a lot more to the reader of it, to know the, you know, where you're getting your inspiration from. And I think this is just that last two lines. Ah, creamy clouds of evening swim in scarlet hues of deepening afterglow. It's a lovely word, afterglow. As Helios submits and grudgingly relinquishes. Thank you very much. My mouth is so dry, I can hardly talk. His final rays of light. I think this is just I don't want to say it's not a very nice word, but it feels pretty. It feels, I can't help it. It's just so lovely. And your use of the colors, yes, it's just a beautiful piece of poetry. And thank you for sharing.
Very agreed. Very much agreed. I totally love this. I enjoy Lynn's contest, and now it's becoming a trend with me, Bobby, that I want to see your entries into Lynn's contest. Because you very much capture her images in six line really well. And I have been working on that, working lens contest. And, you know, I tried and tried and tried, and I've been on all poultry for a year and a bit. And my goal was to first win one of Kevin's contests and then to win one of Lynn's contests. And I finally hit gold in one of her contests, and that was hitting the moon for me. It was better than Kevin's contest for me, because I her six-line contest. And you do it so much justice here. You grab this image, and you capture this image, the creamy clouds. You know, I love the creamy clouds. They are, look like the, you know, tip lemon meringue pie. And it just captures the twilight contemplations. What is a lean is, like you say in your author's notes, the personification of the moon. And Helios is the sun god. And you use those figures to capture a moment of twilight contemplation at the end of a day going down, and you capture it with such beautiful words like scarlet hues of deepening afterglow. And the afterglow is not just light. The afterglow is what you perceive to be beyond that sun and that moon. And as the sun retires in a heavenly conflagration of apricots and gold, your color choices, just amazing, really well-written and beautiful poetic devices. You do these contests justice, my friend.
Thank you. It really took me a while to get a handle on being able to turn out something worthwhile for her, what I consider worthwhile for her contest.
You did very well. That is just beautiful. I think that is just wonderful. Now, let's see what time we've got. 7 minutes left, ladies, so we'll be able to get another couple in, do you think?
I read Celestial Abbott up? Celestial Voyage, may I read it?
Yes, of course, go ahead.
Okay, this one, I challenge you to look at the image, and I looked at all the other entries, and mine went tangential. No one saw what I saw. Which was, anyway, let me read it. Celestial Voyager, I gaze from the fenestra in my quarters aboard our craft, the marvels of a vast Empyrean void are stretched out before me. I travel the celestial spaces knowing it is not an ocean of emptiness, for it is dotted with the cosmic infernos of the stars, the planets, the awesome wonders of the infinite universe, not the least of which are the unique, minuscule miracles of the blue marble I call home and of me. End poem.
Oh, lovely. Thank
wow.
you.
Wow. Go ahead, Reed.
I'm sorry. Did you see me, or were you talking?
No, I say go ahead.
Well, I have to pass back to you for the moment because I can't find it. I don't know where it is.
No worries. I'm going through this in another. I'm so glad you posted two of these six liners. I enjoyed them so much, and just makes the show for me today. And I remember this one. I think it was on space or something. I couldn't write to it. Certainly not like this. What you pick up in your word choices, I gaze from the fenestra in my quarters aboard our craft, Celestial Voyager, the marvels of a vast Empyrean void is stretched out before me. It's just that like always, those opening lines, it grabs you, it makes you go, where are we going next? And it grabs your grasp of space and traveling and celestial places, and then how you weave it in to the wonders of the universe, not least of which are the unique minuscule miracles of the blue marble I call home and of me. And I love that ending. I love that last line. It's like, yeah, our journey, our celestial voyage is it is a marble mirror to who we are. And it was so well written, Bobby, really well done. I'm going to start following your contest entries on Lynn's page.
Thank you. I've learned so much from Lynn's contests. They've challenged me to really, because she says, amaze me. And so I looked at this picture, and I thought, I wanted to see something different in it. And it immediately hit me that she was in outer space, and that's what I saw. And she's gazing at outer space from her quarters.
Mm-hmm. I see it.
Yeah, go ahead, Reva.
Okay, thank you. yes, I see it now. I love it, Celestial Voyager. I travel the celestial spaces knowing it is not an ocean of emptiness, for it's dotted with the cosmic infernos of the stars and the planets. You would, wouldn't you? You'd be sitting there looking at all these wonderful things going past and be amazed by them, because we don't see anything from down here, really, given our street lamps and everything that squashes the view of the sky. If you're out in the country and you look at the sky, you can see 1,000 stars and so much more. So, yes, you've captured that beautifully. I think it's the awesome wonders of the infinite universe, not least of which are the unique, minuscule miracles of the blue marble I call home. Ah, that's lovely. That's beautiful. And again, I love the fact that you give us a glossary. I think that's very good of you, because it really helps. I love it a lot. So thank you very much for that, Bobby. It's beautiful.
Welcome. Thank you for your feedback. I very much appreciate it. I do the glossary because I know I tend to go far afield on my terminology, and I don't want people thinking that I'm doing it simply to show off, which I've been accused of on more than one occasion. And this goes back to me being an old admin officer. You cannot get a message across if people don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Oh, I agree. I mean, that's the beauty of it. That's why I like it so much, because you are not reining yourself in. And I'm not saying, dumbing down. I'm not using that phrase in a derogatory sense at all. But you're allowing us to come with you to where you are. And, we can all learn. Everybody learns. It's nothing. And I love it. I learn new things every day. And you help us. You help us to appreciate and enjoy it. So I would not say it was showing off. It's you using what you have and allowing us in, which is great.
I have to tell you, ladies, that I really, since this the genesis of this particular program on brevities, I've been delighted to have the opportunity to read some of the brevities that I've been crafting over the close to 3 years I've been a member of AP. I was actually going through the inventory last night, thinking, should I throw some new ones out there, or should I pick an old one, or what? Because I realize that sonnets are also brevities, and so I have a fair collection of those. But I do appreciate having the opportunity and the forum to share them with you, because your feedback means a lot to me, because I'm writing it in a vacuum. I look at it, I write it, and the only thing I know is, if it resonates, is if I get something on the contest, which in this case I got honorable mention, which I was very honored by. Because Lynn, for people's knowledge, Lynn does not cavalierly hand out honorable mentions. They're not handed out casually. She very rarely hands them out. So when you get an honorable mention, it might as well be a gold.
Exactly. I feel the same way about Lynn's contest. But I just want to say, what a great show. Thank you, everybody, for calling in. Bobby, for calling in, and everybody for hanging out on the board. Hats and Tay-Tay and Pam. Pam, you always come in and help us out. And it's so wonderful to have you, girl. So thanks again for a wonderful show. And Weaver, my co-host, my dear, love me to pieces. Thank you very much for a great co-host show again. You did awesome. We love the writing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you, Bobby, for popping in. We'd love to have you. Diane, my stalwart friend, thank you. And goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye.